The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly World Cup preview. This pod will take you through groups E, F and H, featuring the likes of Brazil, Germany and some other countries that won't go as far. Our final preview pod will focus on England and Group G, but for now we'll do E, F and H, starting with Group E, brought to you by the Guardian Football Weekly. Group E, Brazil, Switzerland, Costa Rica and Serbia. Brazil, one of the favourites, and they've changed a lot since the disaster in that semi-final against Germany in 2014. Here's South American football expert Tim Vickery.
Well, for 2 years they didn't change very much. They made the extraordinary decision to bring back Dunga as a coach. Dunga had been coaching Brazil from 2006 to 2010, a team full of snarling unpleasantness with an unhealthy dependence on the counter-attack. And really, for 2 years, things didn't get any better for Brazil at all. In fact, with one-third of the World Cup qualifiers played, Brazil were down in sixth place outside the qualification slots. And there were real fears there that the country might lose its proud record of having appeared in every World Cup. But as Dinah Washington so nearly sung all those years ago, what a difference a coach makes. In came Chichi, the fellow who should have taken over in 2014, and belatedly he put the house in order, because what had been a very difficult World Cup qualification campaign turned into an absolute breeze with pretty much the same group of players. 10 wins, 2 draws, 30 goals scored, 3 conceded. And the results have continued to be good in their warm-up friendlies against European opposition. Although that first half against Croatia at Anfield last Sunday does give food for thought. They really struggled against the high press there that the Croatians put against them. They found it difficult to play their way up the field. Will be very interesting to see how they respond to that, especially in their opening game against Switzerland. Huge pressure, of course, on their star man, Neymar. The team is a much more coherent unit now, and Chichi is a coach who has carried out a very deep study of top-level European football, and he's implanted a contemporary idea in the team. He's brought them much closer together, the defensive line higher up the field, so the man has more options for a pass. They're much better in possession than they have been for some time, and when they're on song, they can really make that ball sing. So there is a platform for Neymar, and recently they beat Russia and Germany while Neymar was still recuperating from his metatarsal injury. So they proved to themselves that they're not so dependent on him, but he is the man who breaks the deadlock there in the last 30 metres of the field. He did it against Croatia on Sunday. Brazil were delighted to have him back. And a fair deal still depends on him, whether he can use his individual ability in the interest of the team, whether he can avoid excesses of petulance. If so, then I think Brazil as favourites is perhaps an exaggeration, although I certainly think they're in the big four. But my hope for them is that maybe in this tournament they can remind us, win or lose, they can remind us of why we all fell in love with Brazil in the first place.
Are there any youngsters in that squad that we perhaps don't know as much about who could shine?
It's a fairly experienced squad, and relatively few players have emerged in the last 4 years. And one possibly, and he starts very much as a reserve, but he could get a chance during the tournament, is the fellow that United are just buying, the little left-footed midfielder, Fregi. But one young player who, well, he's lost his place in the team, but I think he should be back, and that's the centre-back Marquinhos, who I think brings pace there to the heart of the defence and is very, very classy. I think he's Brazil's future captain. I suppose another one maybe is the goalkeeper, Alisson, who has had a terrific season with Roma, is on the wish list of almost all the big clubs in Europe at the moment, but there is no more pressurised job in sport than playing in goal for Brazil during a World Cup. You know, often there's not much to do, but sometimes those things that you do, they can have a huge effect on the mood of 200 million people. So this will be a big examination of his temperament.
So it looks like it'll be the race for second place behind Brazil. How does Switzerland rate their chances? Here's Andreas Boeni from Swiss newspaper Blick.
It was a quite easy qualification as well. The opponents didn't play very good. Only Portugal, but the next step this team did. They can control the game. They can play faster than the opponent, and they are not waiting I think this is the reason why they didn't have problem against the little teams. You know, they control the game, Switzerland, because Granit Xhaka, he has the most passes as well in the Premier League, I think. He controls the game. It's a new way of Swiss game. It's more offensive. But the problem is the striker. We don't have a very good striker at the moment. Brel Embolo, who plays at Schalke, is not yet in the shape he must be. So this is the difficult point in our team.
So that's Switzerland. Costa Rica topped their group in 2014, ahead of Uruguay, Italy and England. Here's Esteban Valverde from La Nación.
Costa Rica is a very strong team, and very fast team, and very tactical team. Oscar Ramirez, the coach, used one system with five defense, four midfielders, and just one man in attack. The main characteristic of Costa Rica is the order. The order is important in the Costa Rica style of game. The fans are very positive because Costa Rica in the last World Cup in Brazil won Italy, won Uruguay, and Costa Rica played the quarterfinals. But for Russia, the fans are positive, but you know, it's too hard to repeat the same. And the people think that Costa Rica maybe played the next round, and that's it, because the opponent will be Germany, and it's so hard to win Germany.
If you trust the FIFA rankings, then Serbia are the worst team in this group. Milos Markovic is a Serbian football journalist.
Expectations are not that high at the moment, to be honest. We've been absent from the major international scene for 8 years now, and people kind of got used to our chronic lack of success at the international level. We have a group of fantastic players. As you said before, it's a mixture of youth and experience, and these are all the players that play fantastic in their clubs. But when the time comes to perform for their country, they seem to suffer a confidence blow. And their mental fragility is something to worry about. We used to have plenty of problems, in-squad problems, brawls, quarrels between the players. And whenever the slightest roadblock appears in our way, even when we lose the first match, for example, we fail to recover. We fail to get up. And hence the expectations are not that high. People are not that excited about the World Cup, not as I would have hoped for. But with Krstajic making bold decisions about the team and inducting youth into this squad, we're starting to feel a bit motivated going forward.
Who are the stars of the Serbian squad?
Stars? Nemanja Matic, for sure. He's had a fantastic season at Manchester United, and he's expected to lead the team forward. But I'm personally thinking that Sergej Milinkovic-Savic is going to be there as well. He wasn't in our team during the qualifications, and that was the main obstacle for Slavoj Muslin to continue at helm, to be honest. And Sergei is a huge star in Italy. Everyone is watching him. Manchester United are thought to have made a bid for him, as we all know. And I believe Juventus are in for him as well. And he's a creative force that can make a difference for us.
It's an interesting squad, isn't it? Because you've got you've got a few old players, Ivanovic and Kolarov, yeah, and Matic, and then nine players who are under 23 or 23 and under. Of the youngsters, who should we look out for?
We should look at Andrija Živković, for sure. He also had a fantastic season at Benfica. He displayed his versatility. He's a winger by nature, but he played in midfield this season, and he put in a string of fantastic performances in Portugal, and he's definitely one to look for.
And that is Group E. Next, we'll do Group F. Group F, Germany, Mexico, Sweden and South Korea. The big news from Germany, no Leroy Sané. It shocked us here. Did it shock the Germans? Here's our mate Archie Rintut.
So when the news broke that Leroy Sané was not going to be in the Germany squad, I think the reaction was one of surprise both in Germany and in England. But I think there was a lot more understanding of it in Germany, given the way that Leroy Sané has performed for the German national team in each of his 12 appearances, let alone the latest performance against Austria, where he wasn't very good last week. So not all that surprising, particularly because he just doesn't fit in really, or has not integrated as well into Joachim Löw's style of play as his direct competitor for that left wing spot. Marco Reus is the first choice, but Julian Brandt was the man who he was up against. And Brandt went to the Confederations Cup last year. That certainly played in his favour, whereas Leroy Sané opted to go off and have surgery on his nose. But Sané's still got chances for Germany in the future. It's just that he won't be going to the World Cup this time. So great disappointment for him, although you'll find him still on the cover of most World Cup previews, both in Germany and in England.
Who's the most likely to stop them in any one single game? For me, it's Sweden, such as their defensive discipline. And I don't think Germany will enjoy playing against a defence that is sitting that deep. I think that there are certainly holes to pick in the likes of Mexico and South Korea. I would probably, though, expect Mexico to advance with Germany, even if there have been in terms of some problems there with Mexico when it comes to the biggest occasions. You only have to look at the way that they've capitulated under Juan Carlos Osorio, for example, against Chile in the Copa America a few years ago when they lost 7-0, or indeed when they played Germany in the Confederations Cup last year and lost 4-1 in the semi-final. There's real question marks there, but I would expect Mexico to advance through with Germany. But I think it's going to be actually quite an open group, apart from Germany.
And what about Mexico? Here is Tom Marshall, ESPN's man over there.
I think 4 years on from Miguel Herrera, who obviously captured a lot of attention all over the world, Mexico got a manager who's the polar opposite. I mean, Juan Carlos Osorio, very good at his job, absolutely prepared to manage in the World Cup, desperate to manage in the Premier League as well, speaks English, very cultured, he's almost like a professor. So he's the opposite of Miguel Herrera 4 years ago. But I tell you what, you know, I've covered this Mexico team, all this process from the last World Cup to this one, been to the majority of games, and covering a side that isn't going into Russia 2018 as one of the favourites. One of the things that I most like about this team is the style of play. You can absolutely guarantee that going into that first game against Germany, the world champions, and for many people, the favourites for the whole tournament, that Mexico are going to go and attack. There's absolutely no even an afterthought that they might sit back. They might try and hold Germany. Mexico will take the ball, try and have the majority of possession, throw players forward, and try and dominate the game against Germany. And you know, obviously, it does leave yourself open at the back, but there's something appealing about a side like Mexico that are definitely going to go forward. And honestly, I think they could be one of the teams to watch in this World Cup from an entertainment point of view. I think the makeup of this Mexico squad is, I honestly think it's an ideal age, you know, the average age. It's one of the highest in the tournament, but I don't know. I just think this there's a couple of generation of Mexican players here who I think they're in the prime. And you look at the kind of core of the starting team, the likes of Javier Hernandez, Hector Moreno, Andres Guardado, Hector Herrera, Miguel Layún, Guillermo Ochoa. I mean, the list goes on. I think seven or eight of the starting 11 are basically players in the prime. I think the young Mexican player to look out for, absolutely no doubt about it, is Irving Lozano. He's already had a year behind him at PSV. You know, he's been one of the best players in the Eredivisie in the last season. So I think Lozano is a player that has the potential now to make another step. I mean, whether that'll be this summer off the back of a really good World Cup, or whether that's going to be a year down the line, I mean, I think Lozano is the player that could fit in the Premier League. I mean, there's already been rumours about Everton because the PSV sporting director, you know, has just moved over there. So Everton, Villarreal have been mentioned as well. So, you know, Lozano, if you're looking for a player that you know, could move to the Premier League or a bigger team elsewhere in Europe, think Irving Lozano's undoubtedly the one to keep an eye out for. So Rafa Márquez hasn't been wearing sponsorship on his training gear because basically the US Treasury Department sanctioned him last August for alleged links to a drugs trafficking organization. So, I mean, about of all the players that were at this World Cup, I doubt any have got have had such a crazy last kind of 9-10 months in the build-up to this tournament. And to make it all kind of more, I don't know, even more, give it more impact, Márquez is likely to become the third player in history to feature at 5 editions of the World Cup. So, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, obviously, I think the Mexican Federation and Mexican manager Juan Carlos Osorio are really desperate to count on Márquez's experience in Russia. And that's why they've made this compromise where Rafa Márquez can play at the World Cup. He's part of the squad, but also he's not going to be able to wear any of the sponsors. And a lot of the sponsors are big US corporations because the Mexican national team is wildly popular in the United States with Mexican immigrants and now second, third generation of Mexican-Americans.
Zlatan said he might be at the World Cup and then he said he wouldn't. How exciting. But who is Sweden's top men now? Here's Olof Lund from TV4.
It's been quite big news. It started in February, or actually it's been there all around. And when he made his comeback with Manchester United in December, it gathered some pace. And then in February, he said himself that he was going to the World Cup maybe, and he was interested. And it turned out it was mostly a marketing ploy from his part. But I think a lot of people wanted to see if he could fit into this new national team with a new coach, and many still believe that he's the best attacker Sweden has, even though he plays in the MLS and hasn't done that much.
Who are the stars in the squad?
The squad is the star. Even Zlatan said that in an interview the other day, but I guess Marcus Bay is a goal scorer. Emil Forsberg is the most exciting player who's played for RB Leipzig in the Bundesliga. And of course, Victor Nilsson Lindelöf, who plays for Manchester United.
7 players over 30 and only 3 under 25. Is there a sense that, you know, this is the moment for this squad?
Yes. There is. I mean, a lot of players, they fell down on the pitch on San Siro and they cried when they had beat Italy in the playoff. And I think it's been 12 years since Sweden played in the World Cup and many didn't believe that they could reach the World Cup. And so I think for a lot of players, this is the swan song in their national team careers. It's a team it has its limitations if you look at the players, but they've surprised a lot of people in Sweden, and many have fallen in love with the national team again in a way, because it's you like the underdog and how they work together for themselves and achieve something that no one really believed in.
South Korea are the final team in this group. Son Heung-min is their star. Here's John Durden, a journalist based in Seoul.
Well, the way South Korea play, I mean, obviously it depends a little bit on who they're going to be facing. The issue that they have, as many Asian teams have, is when they come through qualification, and most of the games they play are against fellow Asian teams, when usually Korea are much the stronger team and looking to get forward quickly and dominate possession and dominate the game as much as possible. But I think at the World Cup, Korea recognises that, you know, it's the weakest team on paper of all the teams in the group. So I think they're going to be a little bit more conservative than usual, play more counter-attacking style. The coach, Shin Tae-yong, is likely to play a 4-4-2 formation. He believes that this formation will get the best out of Son Heung-min, the team kind of best hope of scoring goals. They'll be looking for the full-backs to get forward quickly. And when Korea get the ball, I mean, Korea's strength as a team and throughout the team is, you know, the players, there's some fast players. I mean, Son Heung-min is not the only one. There's players like Lee Sung-woo, who used to play for Barcelona and the youth team and now is in Italy. Hwang Hee-chan, of course, may be the strike partner for Son Heung-min. And these are players who are quick. I think that's going to be what they're looking to do. And I think more than that, I mean, the problem that Korea always had, maybe ever since the 2002 World Cup, is defensively there are issues, you know, individual mistakes, lapses in concentration, sometimes positioning issues and very vulnerable from set pieces. So I think it's going to be a hope and a focus on defending as desperately as possible, trying to keep not concede any goals and hoping to nick one or two on the counter. Usually in Korea, expectations are relatively high going into a World Cup. Certainly, the minimum target is usually just get out of the group, as it has been for the past, you know, ever since 2002. But this time is a little bit different, partly because qualification was poor. I mean, Korea were lucky to get through, and really, Korea should never qualify. I mean, it kind of shows a little bit that the lack of strength and depth that Asia has, that, you know, underperforming Korea did manage to qualify. There's been a few injury issues since. Preparation performance have not been great. And, of course, given the toughness of the group as well, I mean, makes it all the more difficult. So I think getting out of the group will be seen as a major success, you know, a very, very impressive achievement. But I think the basic requirement is just to be competitive and have a chance, you know, going to the final game of getting something, just to play better than 2014, which was, you know, a bit of a disaster, and just to be there until the end and, you know, look like it might happen. But so it doesn't have to be getting out of the group, but just as they give a good account of themselves, improve on 2014, you know, and competitive and try and push these, you know, bigger teams all the way.
And that's Group F. We'll be back in 1 second with Group H. Group H doesn't necessarily jump off the page. Poland, Senegal, Colombia and Japan. The top two in this group will face the top two in England's group, though, so worth paying attention. The Poles will be hoping Robert Lewandowski can do it on the big stage. Christopher Lash runs Polish football blog Right Bank Warsaw.
One of the key players who would have played, but probably looks like he's not going to play now, is Kamil Glik, the Monaco centre-back, who injured his shoulder while doing an overhead kick in playing football tennis in training just a couple of days ago. So kind of one of those funny last minute injuries, but not that funny for Poland because he was the key central defender, really, and that's, you know, kind of warrior kind of guy who's able to, you know, a kind of Colin Hendry-esque sort of player, but a bit better in that respect. But, you know, he's out now. Key other players, I mean, the goalkeepers are pretty well known in England, like Szczęsny and Fabianski. They're both good keepers. Krychowiak, who didn't have a good season at West Brom, but still key to the Polish national team. But I think the key player probably is... Oh, and Piszczek, the right-back who played for Borussia for so long, is fantastic. But I think probably the key player who I pick is Zieliński, who's brilliant in this kind of Napoli team, which, you know, scored so many goals and got so many points in Italy this year. And he's 22, 23, kind of player who plays defence-splitting passes. This could be his tournament. I mean, that's a bold prediction, but I think that he's going to be key. So I'm hoping that he steps up. So it's not just all about Lewandowski. If they made the quarters, it'd be fantastic. So that's about their kind of aims. But obviously, the further you go in the tournament, the more chance you've got of winning it. So who knows, really?
Sadio Mane is Senegal's star man, but he's not their only key player. Sam Crooker writes for Sandals for Goalposts, a brilliantly named Asian and African football website. Here he is.
So obviously the one everyone knows is Sadio Mane, and I don't think I need to go into any detail about him. He has obviously just come off a very good season for Liverpool, but he's been their kind of talisman for a few years now. They've got a really good and talented squad on paper. They've got Baldo Keita, who plays for Monaco, and has just had a decent season after moving from Italy. You know, they got a really strong centre midfield, a lot of all combative defensive midfielders, and then at the back they've got Kalidou Koulibaly, just obviously just come off a good season at Napoli. I mean, the thing that bugs Senegal is their lack of kind of dynamism between sort of midfield and attack. All their midfielders are sort of big, you know, really talented defensive midfielders, but they find it difficult to connect with the attacking three. So they're obviously very effective on the counter attack. They play a kind of 4-3-3 system. So when the front three get going, they're very effective and pacey and exciting to watch. The front three being Sadio Mane, Baldo Keita, and Mbaye Niang. But the problem is essentially just transitioning between the midfield and the attack when they're not counter-attacking. Their manager is Alou Cisse. He's a Senegalese manager. It's not always the most common thing for African teams to have a manager from their own country. So that's a really positive step in many people's eyes. They're kind of the former players are going on to management. I mean, English football fans might remember he had a, I think he had a brief spell at Birmingham at one point, but he will kind of be most remembered in kind of the Senegalese people's eyes from being part of that amazing 2002 World Cup squad, where they had that extremely exciting run where they beat France and went quite deep into the tournament. So he is a very cool, calm and collected manager. He'll see him on the sidelines with his kind of his dreads and his glasses. He's quite a pensive sort of guy, and he's sort of been under a bit of pressure after they didn't do too well in the last African Cup of Nations, but they did pretty well in the qualifying. They kind of, I think they only conceded 3 goals and kind of romped through their group with about 14 points, so against some decent teams as well. So I think, you know, he has actually every right to be there, but he's, you know, he must have managed sort of 3 or 4 years there now. So I think he'll need a kind of decent performance if he wants to keep his job, I imagine, such as the kind of slightly roundabout nature of many of the West African teams' management hiring style.
What of Colombia? Tim Vickery tells us everything.
Colombia, they have the same coach as the previous World Cup, the Argentine Jose Pekerman. And going into Brazil 2014, Pekerman said, "This is a tournament when Colombia will take a definitive place at football's top table." Well, phase one complete. They reached the quarterfinals last time for the first time ever, and they unleashed the breakout star of the World Cup in James Rodriguez. The subsequent 4 years have been underwhelming. They've been consistently disappointing. Their qualification campaign was a laboured affair with very few highlights. Pekerman used something like 45 players in 18 games, which is indicative of a coach who didn't really know his best team or perhaps his style of play. The need to narrow it down to 23, I think, does them huge favours. It focuses the mind and it focuses the coach's attention on what the team is going to be. James has also had a rather frustrating time. You know, only so many people can be important at Real Madrid, although he's rediscovered his game and added more things to his game, I think, at Bayern Munich. And he loves playing for Colombia because he's the man. He is important. They now have Radamel Falcao García at centre-forward. He missed the last World Cup. Jeopardised his career, really, trying to get back from injury in time. He is very much a front-to-goal striker. His build-up play is not particularly good. He needs supply. If James can supply him, then Colombia certainly have a chance to equal what they did 4 years ago and reach the quarterfinals.
Finally, Japan. Ben Mabley is an English journalist who is now the face of the Premier League over there.
It's a mess, quite simply. Japan changed their manager 2 months ago. We've only had one friendly match. That was a few days back against Ghana, which they lost and didn't play particularly well in, under the new guy, Akira Nishino, to try and work out how the team is going to play, who's going to be in the first choice 11. We're still not really sure about several things. And so as a result, a lot of the population, a lot of the media have been quite negative about the tournament, I'm afraid.
Why did they change manager?
Well, the official reason was a complete breakdown in communication between the former boss, Vahid Halilhodžić, who took Algeria to the last 16 and gave Germany a bit of a fright there in Brazil 4 years ago. He'd been in charge for almost 3 years. And after the friendlies in March, they decided that the communication problems were too big of a deal and they decided to get rid of him. He was evidently very shocked by this decision. But, I mean, cynical observers have suggested that he wasn't using the bigger names like Kagawa and Honda and Okazaki very much. And perhaps there were some voices who decided that, well, if Japan are going to lose anyway, we might as well lose with our more marketable stars to at least get a few more people on board in a commercial sense.
So are they the star? I mean, a naive viewer would say they would be the stars and should play. Is that not how it really should be?
Well, yeah. I mean, it was certainly a cause for a lot of debate, particularly Honda not being involved, or Okazaki because he's got 50 goals for the national team. Kagawa had struggled to reach his best level for Japan for quite some time, so maybe it wasn't a surprise that he wasn't in the first 11. But I mean, Halilhodžić wasn't even calling some of them for squads, and they were not guaranteed to make the 23. So yeah, there was a lot of debate as to Halilhodžić's approach anyway. But I mean, if you're going to change the manager, then maybe when qualification was secured almost a year before the World Cup, that might have been the time rather than 2 months before. So it's really kind of try and make a last-minute bodge job of it.
Who should we watch out for?
Well, the forward, Yuya Osako, is a player I like. He offers something that Japanese forwards haven't really managed in the past in terms of his hold-up play, his ability to link with others and get the likes of Honda into the play. Another, potentially under the new boss Nishino, is Takashi Usami, who hasn't really ever lived up to the expectations. He came through as a teenager. He went to Bayern Munich and Louis van Gaal, who tried to get him for quite some time. And his career kind of never went on the same trajectory as was expected. But Nishino was the manager who brought him through under Gamba all those years ago. And I think on a personal level, would really like to see this guy succeed. He's an attacking midfielder, plays for Fortuna Düsseldorf, has just helped them get promoted to the German top flight. He was by no means guaranteed a place in the 23 under Halil Hodžić. Now, all of a sudden, under Nishino, he may even start. And, you know, this is his time to shine. He's going to be 26. This is supposed to be his peak, and he has a chance to prove people wrong.
How do you say come on Japan in Japanese?
Ganbare Nippon.
I won't repeat that. And that'll do for groups E, F and H. Coming up on Monday, we'll do a pod where I can talk to actual people. Dom Fifield, who is following England for The Guardian. Surly objectivity from Barry Glendenning. And whimsy from Barney Ronay. We'll do that on Monday. Don't forget, on Saturday, a 100-page World Cup pullout. And in Sunday's Observer, get your World Cup wall charts. We'll see you on Monday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.